Good evening, friends. This is Betsy Dysroth, and I am in the Advancement Unit of the American Friends Service Committee, and I am going to be your host or MC for our call this evening. We expect to be together on the phone for about 45 minutes, no more than an hour. So for people who want to plan, we will be certain to be off the phone by 9 o'clock. I have on the phone with me many of you who I know are listening, and here in Philadelphia, I have the technical assistance of Tony Hariza. In San Francisco, technical assistance of Larry Goldfield. In Baltimore, we have the head of AFSC's international programs, Jerry Sekola. And in Indonesia, we have the benefit of Patricia DeBoer, who is the head of our Asia programs. As you might know from some of the AFSC reports, Jerry Sekola is recently back from her assessment trip to Haiti, and Patricia is in Indonesia following up on some of our program work and getting updates on our tsunami 5 years later work. So let me do some housekeeping. We are going to organize the call by taking some of the questions that we have already received and putting that in our opening comments, and then addressing some of your additional comments towards the end of the call. If any of you have new questions, you can email us at questions@afsc.org. If we have time, we will take them on the call. If not, we will answer you later on email. I'm going to give a very brief history of AFSC's humanitarian assistance work. Next, we will hear from Jerry, and she will talk about her recent and initial assessment trip to Haiti and what we are looking to do in the future. Then we will have the benefit of some lessons learned from Patricia DeBoer as we look at our tsunami work 5 years later. You heard we will be recording the call. Is good enough, we would look to share this later on our website and for people who were not able to attend. So now for me to launch into our history. AFSC has provided humanitarian assistance since 1917. In fact, some of you know that AFSC was founded for Quakers and other COs to have an opportunity to serve those in need. And after World War I, AFSC was feeding 1 million German and Austrian children every day. That relief, recovery, and reconstruction work lasted almost two decades. Many other friends and supporters know our work of over a quarter century, where we were providing assistance in Vietnam. And in 2007, the programs that we led were handed over to local staff, and they are now focusing on poverty alleviation and women's empowerment in one of the poorest provinces in Vietnam. Most recently, or I would say 5 years ago, our work in Indonesia, our humanitarian assistance began. We worked with local partners and provided medical assistance, and then the work has evolved, and Patricia DeBoer will share with us some of the details of that. Now, I want to mention that some questions came in, how are we unique? How is AFSC unique in our humanitarian assistance work? You'll hear specific examples from Jerry and Patricia, but I can tell you that as an organization, we do not specialize in medical work or famine response or construction specifically. So when a disaster hits, we can be flexible in our response, and we can tailor our needs, our response to meet the needs of local people. Also, we often work with an underserved group or in very difficult locations or on a multifaceted issue that might not fit a larger organization. We don't respond to every disaster. If we have a presence on the ground, we are very likely to consider responding, and we will do so if we feel we have something to add and to strengthen our local partners. So those are some of the ways that we are unique and different from other relief and recovery organizations. But we value the work that each organization does, and we find it vital to work together with many other partners, as you have seen in our initial response in Haiti. Now, Jerry, I'm going to turn to you and ask some of the questions that we have received prior to the call today. We have responded to the earthquake in Haiti partly because of our past relationships and experience there. Can you tell us, Jerry, how you saw the people responding on your recent visit?
Yes, thank you, Betsy. I think it's really important for us to note here, and what I experienced, that people all over the world, wherever we are, have instinctual capacities to take care and respond to ourselves and our communities in a crisis, and that this is no less true of Haitians. What I found when we went there was that people had organized themselves, were trying to figure out how to get what they needed, the resources that they needed, the food they needed. Many of us who are watching this on the news, on television, are seeing camps and talk about camps. I think it's really interesting to note that even the very large camps that we're seeing that are holding, you know, thousands of people started out as spontaneous homeless shelters that people themselves organized. There are very few large ones, we've seen them, but there are many, many smaller ones that people have set up and organized themselves. In the shelters where we're providing food, young people actually set up their own organizing committees and figured out how they were going to do their own distributions. But even before that, what was really remarkable is that people were figuring out, as we all do no matter where we are, for our own survival, we build on our capacities, and that's what they were doing. As you drove down the streets, you saw people already bartering, trading, whatever little bit that they had, they were out there trying to support themselves. I was thinking actually today that any of us who live in cities, I don't know how many of the callers or who are listening live in cities who might have people who are homeless, but I do. I live in Baltimore, and right on my church property, homeless people have made shelters for themselves, and that's what I saw in Haiti. People come together and find their security, and it's those of us who are trying to help, the non-governmental organizations, who show up after people have already drawn on their own capacities, and we're there to support what they're already doing. We found that Haitians whose homes were not destroyed had opened up their kitchens and were doing the cooking to provide food in other spaces where people had opened up their compounds and their garden spaces for people to come and build their shelters. So people were already organizing themselves, and we're supporting that self-sufficiency and that hope as we do the assistance that we can provide.
Thank you, Jerry. Tony, would you give us the address? We have some photos on our website that those of you who are listening we thought might like to look at. Can you give us that address, Tony?
Sure. If you can go to the page, the AFSC page, at www.afsc.org/Haiti, which has information about our work in Haiti. On the right-hand side there are two slideshows. One was an initial set of pictures that came from our partner, Handicap International, and then the second slideshow are images that Jerry took and that will help illustrate some of the things she's describing that she saw.
Thank you, Tony. Now, Jerry, another question that has come in is, can you give us an example, a picture, of how our peace-focused approach, AFSC's peace-focused approach, can make a contribution?
Yes. Some of you may have also seen, if you're watching the news about Haiti, that there have been incidents, and I have to say I don't think there have been many, but there have been incidents of tension and violence and people getting agitated, particularly when relief trucks show up with food. In the neighborhoods where we're providing assistance at these spontaneously created homeless shelters, as I said earlier, the communities organize themselves to do their food distribution. And when we were there, it was actually very moving because the young people on this organizing committee had figured out that they wanted the most vulnerable to receive assistance first. So the young children, the little children, came in first, and at this point they were getting cooked meals because people at that point did not have the capacity to cook their own meals, so we couldn't provide dry rations. So we were providing cooked meals, and the little children came in first. And then fairly soon after that, young boys, young men started really showing up at the door, forcing their way to the head of the line, forcing their ways in. And we noticed that the women and the elderly and the remaining children were not were being pushed aside, were being pushed out of the way. And so what we recommended to the committee and to the organization that we're partnering with there was to try to find a way to make this situation more equitable for everyone, recognizing that young men and boys also need to eat. They're also suffering. And so we don't want to turn them away, so what can we do? And we suggested, and it's now being implemented, that the young men and the young boys can come and be there to responsibly get the food for their families. And when they do that, they need to bring with them their mothers, their grandmothers, their sisters, the women in the family, to demonstrate that they're taking the responsibility and that when they're showing up for food, they're doing it because they're also there for their families and their community. And this has, as we understand since we've left, has been a way to diminish the tension and the potential for conflict in the food distribution sites. And this is the kind of thing that I think the AFSC brings to disaster situations like this. We're not the huge relief organizations that we need there because the smaller ones like us couldn't do what they do. But I think we bring an approach that can step back and take a look at how we can make the situation a little bit better and to build on the capacities of people that are there.
Thanks, Jerry. You remind me, as I have heard other colleagues in the past talk about relief situations, of how pragmatic our response is and, as you say, how our lens or our approach of our peace mission always brings an element that is special to the work that we do. Now, I have another question that takes us a little bit into the future. Is anyone, as an organization that you've seen, or AFSC, looking at the future, the longer-term issues in Haiti, the sustainability in terms of health, food, water, and security. And if we're looking at that, what unique longer-term role do you see that AFSC might be able to play?
Well, there are a number of things that make me very hopeful about what we can do. First of all, as you know, well, I hope that people know we want to build the capacity of local organizations to do this work. We shouldn't be there doing it for people as an outside organization. But we think that we have certain technical expertise and a larger view of what's going on elsewhere in the world that we can contribute to local Haitian organizations and communities. First off, we are very mindful that external aid can be a source of conflict in these kinds of situations. If one community or one segment of a community benefits and another doesn't. So we're trying to help our local partners understand that and to be aware of what's going on around them, and even if they and we cannot completely satisfy the needs of a particular community, that we can find ways for others to be there in partnership with us. One area that we're exploring is to help rebuild the social systems. You might have read from my reports or in the news that many of the government, what's called their ministries, we would say departments here, departments in the U.S., Department of Industry, Department of Health, Department of Education, they're called ministries, that many heads of ministries died, and much of the infrastructure, the roads, the schools, the hospitals, the security systems have been decimated. So much of the social, political, economic, cultural, and religious infrastructure needed for the rebuilding of this country has been decimated. AFSC will first look for the opportunities, especially for young people, to be productively engaged. We then expect to assist with the deeply felt security concerns that communities have had before and will have now that they are displaced, not living in even in their old neighborhoods, but ways that we can help them in their new settlements and involve themselves in how they might feel more secure within their own community. We will first look at what are the basic needs that people are mostly feeling concerned about. And one of the things that we already know is a big issue is what happens to children and young people who now can't go to school because their schools or their teachers, their schools have been destroyed, the teachers may be dead or attending to their own crisis situations. That might be an entry point for us into those communities, and then eventually to help them figure out how do they deal themselves with the security and the potential violence that might occur in these new settlements.
Thank you, Jerry. Well, we will come back to you with some other questions, but I would like to now ask Patricia, who's with us from Indonesia, to share some of the lessons learned in our post-tsunami work. Patricia?
Thanks, Betsy. I really want to mirror Jerry's point about the importance of supporting the local response. We found this was very, very critical in our tsunami response. And I also just want to bring out our Cyclone Nargis response in Burma. In that situation, the media coverage was all about how the government was not allowing international relief aid in. But what the media missed completely was that there was a phenomenal local mobilization and local organizing. Volunteer groups, churches, monasteries, schools, businesses were all channeling supplies down into the Delta area for weeks before the international aid began to flow. And because we had some connections with local organizations, we were able to channel immediate support to this local response, which really built the infrastructure that the international response then could flow into when it started to flow. But I think another really big asset that we have, as Jerry pointed out, is flexibility to do things that larger organizations might not be able to do. And an example of this is from our tsunami work. We supported Indonesian NGO to set up mobile medical clinics. But in several months after the tsunami had hit, this organization began telling us about a part of Aceh that was not receiving any assistance whatsoever. And they wanted to look at that part of Aceh. This was East Aceh. And East Aceh was still under martial law. It is the stronghold of the separatist movement. And because of the fighting, the Indonesian government did not invite the UN or the International Red Cross to survey that area for tsunami damage. So based on this concern, AFSC and our Indonesian partner, we decided to try just a small informal survey going into this conflict area and seeing how far we could, what we could learn before we were turned back by the military. But what we found was there were villages that were literally living hand to mouth. They were surviving on what they could collect along the coastline. Small shells, clams, crabs, whatever fish they could gather from however far they could wade into the water along the coast. This was all that they had to eat. So we were able to bring the story out about conditions in this area and urge the coordinating body to pay some attention to this area because there was definitely tsunami damage, definitely a need for international support. And to me, this experience too, it also shows some of our uniqueness as a Quaker organization, because the needs in Aceh were phenomenal all around the province. And so for many organizations, the fact that East Aceh was a conflict area would kind of be a reason to stay away from that area because there was a great deal of work to do in other places. But for us, it was a reason to go to that area. And we also decided to make East Aceh the focus for our longer-term work on the rebuilding and the recovery. The fact that it was a conflict area also affected how we worked, because the partners and the groups that we were supporting in Eastern Aceh were very quick to point out to us that, rebuilding the roads and the houses is the easy part. That in their area, especially, rebuilding a sense of trust in communities, rebuilding a sense of cooperation, a sense of mutual security, this was going to be much, much harder. And so now we're 5 years away from that crisis, but and the physical rebuilding is done. Many organizations have left, but we are still there. And we're working with partners on rebuilding the social and cultural structures that help communities to live and work together in more positive ways.
Thank you, Patricia. You have underscored for us that often AFSC is drawn to working in some of the most difficult places, region that we responded to in Indonesia, but also in Burma and Myanmar. And I think it is another reason that we decided to respond in Haiti. We had been running program work in a very rural southwestern area of Haiti for several years, almost 20, and those programs are just now standing on their own feet. But we had been looking at getting involved in the city and the capital when this terrible earthquake hit but we felt that it was an opportunity to respond. Patricia, could you also give us an example of, in a long-term view, rebuilding the social and cultural structures? Maybe a personal story.
Yeah. I can give a very, very personal example that I just recently learned about. In one of the communities that we were supporting, there was a family, and the daughter of this family, she actually stopped speaking in about 2003. This was about the time that the father in the family was arrested and tortured under martial law. And he came back from that experience with his health broken and also very bitter. So from 2003, the mother, her name is Umi Salama. Umi Salama had to manage, you know, all of the support for the family. And she had a small business, which kept the family afloat. But the business was completely destroyed in 2004 when the tsunami hit. So our partner, working in that community, provided a microcredit loan to Umi Salama so that she could restart her business. But this partner also felt that just providing microcredit was not enough in this community. This community needed more. So we were able to work with the partner to help them design a program that they called the Village Harmony Program. And their goal was to raise the status of women in this community and help them be more active in the community and more appreciated. And they used very, very traditional ways as entry point. They started with workshops on spirituality and the family. What makes a good Muslim family? How husbands and wives are mutually dependent and should support each other. And they also encouraged the women to begin teaching classes every Saturday afternoon to the children on cultural traditions, and they started up a cultural dance club. And then they urged the community leaders to start holding the village festivals again. And, of course, the women were very involved in the organizing of these festivals, and the children's dance club could perform. And it was by participating in all these different levels of activity that this family has been completely transformed. The daughter has started to speak again. She now socializes. She's part of the dance club. The husband is supporting Umi Salama on their business, and their business is doing very well. So, you know, these are not what you'd normally think of when you think of disaster relief, you know, dance clubs and spirituality workshops. But for this family, this holistic approach really, really made it possible for them to succeed. The economic input was important, but it was the larger work that this organization was able to do and that AFSC was able to support that really led to a transformation for the whole family.
Thanks, Patricia. You've really brought it very real for me tonight. Before I turn back to Jerry with another question, I would like to say for those folks who have joined our call, if you have a question that you would like us to try and answer, either now on the call or perhaps in a follow-up email, you can send your question now to questions@afsc.org. And now, Jerry, I'm going to ask a question about volunteerism. We have received several individuals who have wondered if they were going to volunteer or if they were going to travel to Haiti, what should they take into consideration? And I know from your recent visit you had some direct experience of people who were not prepared, and I think it would be helpful if you shared some of your thoughts about how people could prepare if they were going to Haiti.
Yes, thank you, Betsy. It's very important for people who feel moved and compelled to offer their personal assistance to find an organization to which they can offer their particular skills. There are very specific needs and demands. They tend to be medical. It's not to say that they're not also people who are going and volunteering and, you know, moving debris and reconstructing things. That is happening, but Haitians pretty much can do those things themselves. The harder part is the technical assistance that's needed, and it's very important to be connected to organizations that are doing that kind of technical assistance. I ran into a number of medical teams who were very well organized. They were associated with organizations, and they were doing, you know, very, very effective collaborative work. Amazingly, when you think about, you know, the general hospital in Haiti, there was a medical team from Boston. There was Handicap International that we were supporting. There were Germans. There were Spanish medical teams. And they all integrated very well, respectfully, with the Haitians that were already there. On the other hand, I met two doctors in an airport, surgeons who showed up and, you know, wanted to go there and do surgery and felt bitter and rejected, but they hadn't connected with an organization. They kind of just showed up. So it's very important to find organizations that have the capacity to accept volunteers and know what it is that's needed and can find and connect the needs with the skills that people are willing to offer. And I think, Betsy, you've identified it, a website where people might be able to go to see where their volunteerism might be useful.
Yes, I'll mention that site in a minute, Jerry. I wondered, I hadn't asked you this question before, but I wondered how you don't speak French. How were you able to communicate with your English, and what is the Creole language like for you to understand?
Well, I speak a little bit of French, but I have to tell you an interesting story. I lived and worked in Haiti some time back, and I've been in international work for over 30 years, and the one thing that I don't do well is language. And so I'm a real stickler for, you know, people who engage in this work need to be able to communicate in different other languages. I sort of got in under the radar screen. And when I was in Haiti, and I had some French, but I never felt comfortable with it, I was at a big meeting one day, and I was the head of the organization there, and I said in French, I don't feel comfortable. This is a very important meeting. I don't feel comfortable in these discussions in French, and so I would like my assistant to translate for me. And the government said to me, no, that's not acceptable. So language is very important. And fortunately, I can understand a little bit of French, but I do realize, and there are more Haitians now, you know, who speak English and who can translate, but it is a stumbling block. So language is important in this situation.
Thanks, Jerry. Now, the address that Jerry mentioned is one that we have just found by doing some research on the web, and it is http://www.causecast.org, and then you can ask when you're at that website how to volunteer in Haiti. And I hope CauseCast, CauseCast. And if anybody didn't hear me, you can email to questions@afsc.org, and I can get that to you on email as a follow-up. Now, we do have some callers who are on who were thinking of taking some art kits over to young people, and I think some of the advice that Jerry's given about connecting with organizations and preparing is relevant. But again, if you have additional questions, we could follow up with you on email. Jerry, I don't know whether you have heard about the debt relief proposal that has been talked about and whether AFSC has studied that at all and whether you would want to speak to that.
Yes. Some of you may know that the AFSC has long been involved in the whole issue of debt in developing countries, and we have been very much involved in the Jubilee campaign to relieve debt. And my understanding is, and I will double check this, but I believe that the Haiti debt obligation has been relieved, and that now the aid that's being provided is not in form of loans, but is in the form of grants. Now, this is a very complex issue, so there may be all kinds of loopholes and other issues involved here. But I believe I'm correct in saying that Haiti's debt has been relieved and that any assistance now is in the form of grants. And we can double-check that, and we certainly can get that information on the website.
Great. Thanks, Jerry. Well, I think we've addressed most of the questions. There is one thing that has continued to come up in our conversations, and a few folks asked prior to the call to articulate how AFSC is different than some of the other relief and recovery organizations. And Jerry, would you like to speak to that?
Yes, it's a great question, and I thought about that when Patricia was talking about how we were willing and able to go into the most conflicted spaces in Aceh that were affected by tsunami, where, many did not tread. And it made me think of this situation. Very few international relief and development organizations have focused their work in the urban sector anywhere in the world. And I've been in this work for over 30 years, and very few, almost no international organizations work in the urban sector. In the AFSC Latin America and Caribbean region, our focus actually really is on urban violence and freedom from fear. It's our overarching strategy based on a lot of rigorous analysis that's gone on in terms of urbanization. 70% of populations in Latin America and the Caribbean are in the urban area. And urbanization is a reality that we have not coped with in a very conscious and reasonable way. The most serious consequences of the Haiti earthquake are in the urban center. And we're well placed because of this focus that we've had now on urbanization and urban violence to begin to address some of the urban problems that have only been exacerbated by this disaster, especially the fear that people have of violence. In Haiti especially, the country was very centralized. Port-au-Prince, which was most affected by the earthquake, services the entire country. And people who are fleeing from Port-au-Prince. We hear the stories of many people moving out to the provinces. And when they get there, those towns and urban centers are not going to be what they were used to when they lived in Port-au-Prince. And so we expect that there's going to be an influx back into Port-au-Prince. So what makes us different, there are many things, but one of them is that we're actually focused on the urban sector, which is a major reality in the Caribbean and in Latin America, and certainly in Haiti, which has been so centralized into the capital city. But also, we are flexible and are looking for the issues that communities see as their greatest needs and priorities. We're able to do it because we're small, and we certainly need the skills and the capacity of the large relief organizations. But given that the social infrastructure of this country has been so diminished and devastated, we think we have something special to offer there. Our footprint, our administrative infrastructure will be light. We're building local people's capacities, and we're maximizing the use of the resources for the people that we're working with.
Thanks, Jerry. There's one other question that both maybe, Jerry, you might reflect on, and Patricia as well, and that is, how does AFSC connect into other organizations? How do we coordinate with larger organizations, recognizing that we're small, but to try and not be duplicative? Jerry, I know you have some experience in the recent assessment visit and in other situations of working closely with Interaction, the coordinating agency for many relief efforts. And Patricia, you might want to speak to that. Maybe, Jerry, we can start with you.
Yes, we are very connected with Interaction, for those who might not know, is an association of over 175 private voluntary organizations in the United States who do relief, international work, relief and development work. And we are a member. We connect with many of the large NGOs. In fact, we partnered with Handicap International in this instance, and we communicate regularly with the large international organizations. I think one of the things that we do especially well, because we work so closely with local organizations, is that we translate for those local, in this case, Haitian organizations, we translate the expertise that has been learned in the international sector of the large organizations and the associations we belong to, the standards and the codes of conduct that are so important in these relief efforts that all of us have learned over time, whether it was in tsunami or the Rwanda genocide or Ethiopia famine, or we can go down the list. And we're all learning how to do this better. And I think the AFSC, as not a huge relief and development organization, but a very seasoned, older organization, can bring the credibility of connecting the technology of the large organizations and the know-how to the relationships we have with local partners.
Thanks, Jerry. Patricia, I know we worked with many local partners in Aceh. Could you speak to that experience of...
I think Jerry's right that we are able to translate some of the international knowledge down to local partners, but I think it also very much goes the other way, that we are able in some cases to be an advocate for some of the local partners who, especially when a full-scale relief effort gets going can feel rather overwhelmed by what is going on around them. And the coordinating meetings will often tend to switch to English as the common language, and so the local partners feel as though they can no longer really follow the discussion or communicate anymore. And this is part of a role that we played in Indonesia under the tsunami. Also with Cyclone Nargis, to help the local partners bring their stories out. And so for example, when the U.S. government was considering whether it should continue humanitarian aid in Burma, we were able to bring some of the people that we had been working with on cyclone relief, some people from inside the country, to attend meetings and to talk to people at the State Department and to say, this is what's going on. This is what we need. Yes, we absolutely need the international response to continue to support what we are doing. So I think our be a link goes both ways and can be a very useful role that we can play.
Thank you, Patricia. Well, friends, I think we have answered the questions that we've received so far. Jerry, maybe you could sum up briefly where is the where we're going in our next phase after the initial phase, what our next few steps are in Haiti, and I will then close with a couple of housekeeping things.
Yes, we're continuing to monitor what the immediate needs are that we can respond to, and we don't, frankly, want to we want to look forward to being there in the longer term reconstruction. So our next phase, in addition to looking what else we can do, and we're very concerned about the rains that will be coming and what kind of shelter will be needed, but then we're beginning to assess where are our next steps, what are our entry points. We know that these people who are homeless, who have created their own homeless shelters, are going to be there in those shelters for a long time. We're waiting to see the government's plan for the next phase, because people cannot stay in their neighborhoods as reconstruction and cleanup is going to be a huge issue. So we want to see what is our next entry point to help these communities who now are in new neighborhoods. You know, they're not in their old neighborhoods, or they're in these shelters. And how do we help them cope? How do we help to provide some normalcy to their lives? What do we do about children who need something to do every day, and hopefully it's educational and productive? I think that's something we're going to be looking at very closely. And especially for young people, the youth, what do they need in these new environments that they're going to be living in to make their lives productive and constructive so that it doesn't contribute to instability and insecurity in their new living environments.
Thanks, Jerry. Well, here are some things that we've mentioned on the call. If you would give us feedback, you could either call AFSC and let us know how we did, or send an email message to questions@afsc.org. We really welcome hearing how you experienced our conversation tonight. If you have other questions that we haven't answered, or maybe if you got on the phone after we might have answered your question, you could be in touch with us at questions@afsc.org. If you're interested in the address for the volunteering that I suggested, you can also email us. And we are going to see how the sound quality of this recording is, and we may be able to put it up on our website. I did want to say to everyone who's called and people who have already contributed, thank you so very much. Your financial support has made our initial response and our ability to think about staying for the long term possible. It is truly through the generosity of so many supporters that we've been able to work in the tsunami-affected area of Aceh for 5 years and counting. And I think that that trust in the service committee to use resources over the long term for this deep healing and real reconstruction is something that's unique, and it's made unique by the generosity of our family of friends and supporters. Somebody did email and remind me that people can make contributions for the Haiti relief still, charitable deductions to Haiti through the end of the month will even be eligible for a 2009 tax deduction. So those are our closing comments. Thank you all so very much for listening and joining with us tonight. We have enjoyed organizing this call for you all. Thank you so much and have a lovely evening. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Please stand by.